everyone in this room today, everyone who would like to be part of that. In that spirit of hospitality and welcome, I now encourage you to find someone around you who you don't know too well and say good morning.
Everybody. My name is Eleanor Nunez, and I'm music director here at UUCF. And for our opening hymn, we will be singing number 1008, When Our Heart is in a Holy Place. So please rise in mind, body, or spirit and join us in singing.
There's some energy in the room today, I feel it. Our call to worship this morning is by Eileen Karpeles. Out of wood and stone, out of dreams and sacrifice, the people built a home. Out of the work of their hands and their hearts and their minds, the people fashion a symbol and a reality. May this house be truly a place of meeting, meeting one with another, in warmth and joy and openness, meeting one with another, in courage and love and trust. May all who enter here trust one another so surely that they dare to share the deep fires that burst into anger, as much as the sweet spring waters that swell into laughter, the slow erosion of wounded tears, as much as the soaring song. May these walls know silence, as 100 hearts search inward, each for its own small spark of hope that might otherwise be snuffed out in the house, in the noise. May these rafters hear the voice of the child as surely as that of the orator, and the sound of the lute, the clack of the keyboard, the swish of the broom, and know that all are as holy as the shout of a million stars. May the rain fall lightly on this house the sun shine warmly, the winds blow softly, and bless it as a place of joy and peace. I now invite Calvin Ballard to light our chalice this morning. Calvin, as most of you are aware, is our sound technician and does so much more for the church. Having done the sound for years myself, I know what a labor of love it is, and sometimes it goes somewhat unnoticed. So thank you on behalf of everyone, Calvin. I now invite you to join me in saying the words on the screen. This flame affirms the light of truth, the warmth of community, and the fire of commitment. Love is a doctrine we share. The quest of truth is our sacrament, and service is our prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge in freedom, to serve human need. Thus do we covenant with one another. Dale, to tell us about Camp de Benneville.
Camp de Benneville Pines complements our congregation's experience by invigorating personal connections with quality time and enjoying the awe of nature among the tall pine trees. There are week-long events for four different age groups during the summer, as well as family, adult, and art camps or events, even the weekend events for young adults, for yoga, for gaming, for our congregation, for men, for women, for rainbow families, and so on, provide an excellent length of time in a safe setting to get to know each other. See the de Benneville full table display in the social hall and come to a lunch celebration at 1 p.m. at my house and my wife's house, honoring how de Benneville is interconnected in our congregational activities. De Benneville has made giant strides towards programming that strengthens youth, families, and the wider community to engage everyone in the seven principles of Unitarian Universalism. Healthy communication is enhanced in the relaxed environment at Camp de Benneville Pines.
Now imagine me with blue hair and about 20 years younger. 3 months after experiencing devastating grief, I was terrified of doing just about anything. Navigating life in the wake of my love's death was difficult enough, and I didn't much feel like I had the right to attend our congregational weekend at de Benneville Pines. After all, I was just a new member. I hadn't found what felt like my place in our community. After much encouragement from Reverend Jason and others, I signed up for part of the weekend. The best way to get to know our community, I knew, was to participate. At de Benneville, you can do as much or as little of exactly what it is that you need. Whether your goal is a peaceful weekend with like-minded folk or a fully engaged journey or anything in between, I promise you, you will find it there. Like much of Unitarian Universalism, I dove in head first when I got there. But maybe try feet first on your visit. No one needs to reenact the evening of altitude sickness I experienced after the wine social, trust me. It was precisely the healing my soul needed. When the trip came around this year, naturally, I jumped at the chance to attend. I sought to really immerse myself in our community in a way not possible for me last year, and my soul is brighter for it. Imagine the way your heart feels at its fullest. Amplify that by contentment, peace, and love. That's a small taste of de Benneville. It's a special kind of magic, and we are exceptionally lucky to be able to visit such a stunning location and to share this brilliant experience with each other. There's no better way to get to know your fellow UUs. It's a wonderful experience and holds a special place in my heart. It feels like peace. It feels like home. It feels like love.
All right, as you can see, June is Rice Month. Each week, our children collect food donations to provide for the needy in the community. We invite our children to sit up front following the collection for the story.
My name is Rachel White, and I'm the Director of Religious Education here at UUCF, and I invite all the children to turn their attention to the projector screen because we're going to be reading a story this morning. This is about a little rabbit that learned to listen. It's called The Rabbit Listened by Corey Dorfeld. One day, Taylor decided to build something new, something special, something amazing. Taylor was so proud, but then out of nowhere, crash, things came crashing down. The chicken was the first to notice. Cluck, cluck, what a shame. I'm so sorry this happened. Let's talk about it, cluck, cluck. But Taylor didn't feel like talking, so the chicken left. Next came the bear. Grr, grr, how horrible. I bet you feel so angry. Let's shout about it. But Taylor didn't feel like shouting, so the bear left. The elephant knew just what to do. Trump-a-da, I can fix this. We just need to remember exactly the way things were. But Taylor didn't feel like remembering, so the elephant also left. One by one they came. The hyena, hee-hee-hee, let's laugh about it. The ostrich, gulp, let's hide and pretend nothing happened. The kangaroo, tiss, tiss, what a mess, let's throw it all away. And the snake, shh, let's go knock down someone else's. But Taylor didn't feel like doing anything with anybody. So eventually, they all left, until Taylor was all alone. In the quiet, Taylor didn't even notice the rabbit, but it moved closer, closer, until Taylor could feel its warm body. Together, they sat in silence until Taylor said, "Please stay with me." The rabbit listened. The rabbit listened as Taylor talked. The rabbit listened as Taylor shouted. The rabbit listened as Taylor remembered and laughed. And the rabbit listened to Taylor's plans to hide, to throw everything away, to ruin things for someone else. Through it all, the rabbit never left. And when the timing was right, the rabbit listened to Taylor's plan to build again. "I can't wait," Taylor said. "It's going to be amazing. And even if something happens again, sometimes hugs say more than words."
So do we have Donette here this morning? Are you here? Oh, you're here. Would you please come on up? And I don't know, is Chris Heaton here this morning? I don't think so, but Mary Botts, would you come up as well? And we just wanted to make sure that you two also got acknowledged. We acknowledged our Chalice Circle facilitators last week, and Chalice Circles It's a continuation of the ministry that's done here on Sunday mornings. It's a way to get to know people in small group settings. And it's very important to the health of this church. And so we're really grateful for the people who are involved with that. So Mary Botts has been a facilitator for a while. And she has also now agreed to take over coordinating this program. So we thank Mary. And Donette has done everything from the beginning to get this program off the ground. She's been a visionary. She believed in this format before I think anybody else here knew it existed. And I'm deeply grateful that when I came into this congregation 3 years ago, she already had this up and running, which saved me a huge amount of work, which always gets you in the minister's favor. So thank you so much, Donette. We have flowers, we have a mug for you and cards, and we are deeply, deeply appreciative of the work that you have done.
Thank you.
Begin our time of joys and sorrows, I'd like to invite our worship associate to light a few candles this morning. There's a lot happening in the world this week, but it is the 75th anniversary of D-Day this week, so I invite him to light a candle in acknowledgement of that. It's also the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall Uprising, and of course it's Pride Weekend, so we light a candle for that. And it's Pentecost Sunday in the Christian church, and also Shavuot for our Jewish friends. So a lot happening in the world that we'd like to acknowledge and keep acknowledging those things, because that's one of the ways that we remember and remind ourselves of the important connections that we have to one another. I now ask if you do have a personal brief joy or sorrow that you would like to share with the congregation, something that is too great to hold by yourself, I invite you to come forward and do so at this time.
Tell us your name. Hi, I'm Glad Sharp, and I just come back from a trip of a lifetime. My daughter and I and other friends, there were 10 of us, we sailed up the Blue Danube in Eastern Europe. We started at the Black Sea and we went up to Budapest. But on the way, we had a coach ride to Transylvania, where the Unitarian movement started, and I realized I have a theory as to why it started there. But anyway, got to rub noses with Dracula and Eastern Europe really had their moments. Saw some bombed out homes that were still bombed out, and saw their rebuilding, and it was just a great experience.
Good to be back.
I am Liz McTann, and a lot of you guys know me because I sing here sometimes. I told you guys a couple months ago that I was recording an album. It comes out next week. So it's called Echo Hill is the band, and I'll bring some copies, I think. But I just, without the support of you guys, I don't know if I would have taken that leap and gone to it. So thank you.
My name is Jennifer. We just recently had a family friend receive a terminal lung cancer diagnosis, so I'd like to light a candle for her. And also to end with a joy is our boys' great-grandparents are celebrating their 60th wedding anniversary this week, and they're still with us.
I'm Allison Daniels, and I'm just lighting a candle of concern regarding my stepdad, Edwin Burnett. He is he went to the hospital this week. They could not find anything wrong with him. For some reason, that troubled my heart more, because we've always been able to find something, you know, take care of it, and he's better, but he's still just so tired, sleeping a lot, and they just told us, well, he's almost 94. I don't think that should be an answer, but that's what they told me. So we're just trying to deal with that and help him get back to himself if possible.
Good Good morning. I'm Sherry Tanner, and I have visited here in February and in May, and now I am a California resident. So I have moved here from Athens, Georgia, and drove with my best friend, Leanne Cordell, over 2,000 miles. We got here Monday night and to be with my love, Jim, and start my new job Monday at Transamerica in West Covina. But I am excited that you guys are here because you make me feel at home when I'm so far from home. And my sorrow is to say goodbye to my best friend. She has to fly back Tuesday, and my life and my family and friends back in Georgia. But I hope to make a new life and friends and everything here. Thanks.
And I don't know if it's exactly a joy or sorrow, but several months ago, my car broke down and I had to get rid of it. And I've been so fortunate. That is a joy that Rosie comes and picks me up and takes me to church every week. I don't always have a ride home. And she tries to find me somebody, and a lot of times she does, and it's wonderful. If I live over on Ameridge between Lemon and Harbor, and any week at all, luckily at my horrible age, I could walk home. But if any week that you feel free to drive me and you're going that way, I'd appreciate an offer. Thank you.
Morning, everybody. I had an interesting experience yesterday. As some of you may know who have seen me in here talked, I moved back here from Texas in February to be with Mom. But I got downwind there was going to be a reunion from Sonora, which I graduated from in 77. And it was like 5 years classes down and 5 years up. And I hadn't seen any of my friends. 42 years. I'm not a big social media guy, so nobody keeps in touch with me. I wrote my name on the name badge and I put it on my shirt and told everybody who I was, and I got all these disgusted, disrespectful looks. I'm trying to figure out what's going on. 20 years ago, somebody posted that I had died of a heart attack, and they thought I was playing a cruel joke showing up as who I was, and then when I took my cowboy hat off, they knew it was me. And I met a whole lot of people I hadn't seen in a long time.
Oh my gosh.
I invite you into the spirit of prayer, meditation, and reflection. This morning, we explore what it means to truly connect, to communicate with one another. As we've heard, our lives are a cavalcade of ups and downs, surprises, joys, challenges, sorrows, new hopes, expectations. And always there is that search to be understood, that search to look into someone else's eyes and know that they are truly listening. It's easy in our fast-paced world of sound bites and coarse language to feel we always have to be ready with an answer. But there is something deeply nourishing to our spiritual selves when we lean into the unknown.
when we approach one another with curiosity, when we recognize that our lives together are something to be explored, discovered, that each person is a discovery. I invite you now into a shared moment of silence as you consider that idea of discovery. Often the question at the core of our being is one asking when I am frightened, when I am alone, when I am in need, who will be there for me? And the other question that we should remember to ask ourselves is how can we be there for others in those times? What does it mean to open up our spirits and our hearts and our minds and be present to the reality of another human being's experience? In the days and weeks and months and years ahead, let us continue to ask these questions, to continue to find each encounter with another person an opportunity to discover, to be curious, to learn more about that deep spiritual connection that we hold to one another.
When I
And now for a moment, we move into more practical matters. The Washington Post, they have an online fact checker. Are you familiar with this? It matches the claims of politicians with factual analysis to determine lies or misleading claims. Now, the Washington Post may lean left, but the beauty of this database is that you can actually look at the words said by the politician or whoever side by side with their factual analysis and make your own determination about how truthful that statement is. So all that is to say that the number for the current president's false statements are calculated now to be 10,111 false or misleading claims since April 27. Now, even if we account for liberal bias here, we're still likely talking about thousands of untruths. And certainly previous presidents were guilty of whoppers. However, what we're seeing is a new level of audacity when it comes to lying. This is all to illustrate a problem we have in this country. We have a problem with healthy, honest communication. But this is not just on the political field. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, myself included, that the majority of people in this room probably did not learn healthy communication skills from the family that raised you. I'm not saying they were bad families, but what I'm saying is healthy communication isn't particularly natural to the human condition. Our earliest words like mommy or daddy or mine are key words to make sure our most basic needs are met. In human history, communication likely develops out of those most basic needs, you know, warning someone else that an animal was attacking, conveying that we're hungry or thirsty. Humans didn't start developing language because they wanted a dialogue about moral quandaries or philosophical ideas. People spoke because they needed to convey important information efficiently in the interest of self-preservation. Verbal communication obviously has evolved over time. Higher level healthy communication skills are still not natural. And in that same sense, I'm not sure telling the truth is either. The human race is programmed to survive. Our current president is someone who found a mechanism to survive lying, and he uses that to get what he wants. And he's not the first politician to do that. There's a long line of Democrat and Republican politicians that precede him. He's just unique in how brash and unapologetic he is in the way that he does it. And the reality is that his penchant for lying is really just a magnifying glass for some of today's most prevalent communication issues. A kind of discourse that thrives on lies, insults, and defensive puffery. The president is simply the result of where we've been as a culture, a warning incarnate about where we don't want to go. We, as people of faith at least in the power of humanity, can't settle for our natural selfish survival state. We are called to do something, to begin a shift towards something unnatural, healthy communication. Communication that honestly and accurately builds understanding between two or more parties. So I've come to believe certainly in my study in getting my master's in interfaith work, which was built around conflict resolution, and I've studied communication a lot. I believe there are three unnatural things that we human beings have to really work at that are absolutely essential to healthy communication. The first is direct communication. Now, this sounds really simple, right? We speak directly to who we have a concern with. But again, let's just consider our early family lives. And I'm going to, how about we explore a hypothetical situation here. So you've got two brothers. There's a 10-year-old and an 8-year-old. They're sitting at the kitchen table. They're playing with the 8-year-old's Star Wars figures. Suddenly, the 10-year-old takes his foot and smashes it down on R2-D2, crushing him to bits. Now, what will happen? Choice one. The 8-year-old will ask his brother to sit down at the table with him. He will calmly explain to his brother how sad and upset he feels. He will express his confusion at the incident that just occurred. He will invite his brother to explain his actions while he practices deep listening. His brother will explain why he did what he did and then tell him, "I heard what you said and I'm sorry." The two will then discuss next steps and then hug before resuming their playtime. So this is choice one. Or will choice two occur? The 8-year-old will look at the smashed R2-D2 on the ground and then wail, "Mommy!" Which of those choices is the more natural response right now? So choice one is what we know would be most ideal to happen. But choice two is what we know will most likely happen. There's a reason the Cain and Abel story has stuck around all these years. Communication is hard, even or especially for siblings. But we're not just talking about kids or siblings, of course. Calling for mom or dad when faced with sibling conflict is an example of triangulation. It's one of the earliest ways we learn to deal with our anxiety. When we get into conflict with someone, it makes us anxious. And so rather than talking directly to the person we are in conflict with, we find someone else, a third party. We create that triangle with that third party. We share our feelings with that third person, and oh, there's such relief. That person can sympathize with us and share some of our anxiety about the situation. Only thing is, we still haven't dealt with the problem directly, have we? The source of conflict remains. This is probably one of our greatest coping mechanisms, and you see accomplished people well into adulthood unable to effectively initiate the direct communication needed to resolve conflict. It's hard. So the second key to healthy communication, in my opinion, is what I call non-anonymous and relationship-based communication. So if we think about corporate culture, which of course infuses so much of American culture, and how it appreciates this idea of anonymous feedback. Remember those comment cards you fill out at restaurants and stores? Well, that's a good thing, right? Sometimes well-meaning people in our congregations suggest that we do the same thing here. The difference between us and a business is that we are supposed to be in a real relationship here. And real relationships are not built on anonymous feedback. So, for instance, have you ever wanted to deliberately start an argument with a spouse or loved one? I hope you haven't, but in case you did, here's a surefire way of making that happen. Just tell them, "You know, people are saying you're fill in the blank." Trust me, this will not go over well. Because we all know what that means, right? People are saying usually means, "I think this, but I'm really uncomfortable saying it." Being in relationship means that we don't put people in that position of dealing with anonymous feedback, because there is really nothing effective you can do with it when you can't engage directly with the source of it. Relationship-based communication requires us to be accountable for our thoughts, feelings, and opinions. Because look what happens when things aren't relationship-based. Now, as appreciative as I am for what technology has done for us, I think we can also attribute the rise in untruthfulness and poor communication to the internet. It's done some great things on building relationships, but it's also been challenging. I mean, those Russian bots are designed to get us right in our weak spots. Because people can be anonymous online. There's no sense of being in relationship with one another. It's a free-for-all. It's hard to know what people really think and feel, hidden behind their computer screens. So for all the mistakes we human beings have historically made, we at least started out in small groups where we were accountable to one another. Communication was naturally based in relationships. This is how this communication has evolved to this level, by being relationship-based. Technology and globalization, again, both of which have their gifts, also encourage isolated, untethered, even dangerous forms of communication. So humanity struggling in the larger sphere with things like telling the truth, showing our vulnerabilities, and so on. And meanwhile, a church community like this one invites us to learn or relearn those skills. It's not about being natural. It's about being better than that. So the third key to healthy communication is being curious, curiosity. Again, sounds so easy. Be curious. But how often do we really listen with an open mind to what someone says? And how often, I don't know if you've ever done this, but have you ever asked a question and don't actually listen to the answer because you think you already know what that person is going to say? That's going to get you in trouble, in case you haven't figured that out. I've done it many times. Being curious is a way of looking at the world that helps us get past jaded outlooks and re-engage with wonder. Some of our greatest work as human beings is to remain curious about one another. It's the essential thing missing from so much internet discourse, from all those television news commentators. No curiosity. They've already made up their minds. They're dialoguing about something they've already made up their mind about. When we listen with curiosity, we encounter ideas that surprise us and can actually get us in touch with more parts of ourselves, even understand our own emotional selves better. I think men in particular have been done a terrible disservice in this area. For a long time, the only emotion acceptable for a man to express was anger, outrage. Forget expressing emotions like sadness, joy, confusion, disappointment. Again, these are often lessons learned early on. Boys aren't supposed to cry, man up. But curiosity helps us to rewrite these old narratives that we all struggle with. Rewrite them through deep listening. Listening beyond talking points, beyond superficialities, beyond surface arguments that we can use to attack someone else in order to win an argument. So I'm going to invite you to look at this video. It's about a minute long. And it's a father engaging with his son, who's a baby, who doesn't actually use words yet.
They need to work on that, right?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
Okay.
Did you understand it, though?
Yeah.
No. Okay. All right.
Huh?
Oh, not this one. This is the grand finale of this.
Okay, is that my last?
Yeah, that's the last one. That's what I was wondering. I don't know what they're going to do next season because they did some stuff this time. Exactly what I was thinking. Oh, yeah. Right. Don't bring that again. You know what I'm saying? Don't do the same stuff. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I think like that. Yeah. Yeah. Like, go somewhere else with that, but don't break here, you know what I'm saying? Yeah.
All right, you can see.
That's what I said. He did. He's like, you know what I'm saying? And I was like, what in the world? But don't do it here, you know what I'm saying? Yeah.
That, clearly, that the baby is not actually able to form words yet, but the father is listening to the spirit of what that child is saying and responding, and this baby is actually getting something out of that. I mean, what an early, an important early lesson about being listened to, about being engaged with on that level that even goes beyond the words themselves, that deep connection. There was a time I was an HIV prevention counselor. And I was armed at that time with a lot of tips to offer clients about how they could be safer in their intimate practices. But as I had been trained, I didn't start the sessions with that. I started by saying, how are things in your life? And I remember one client, more than one client really, but I remember one in particular who looked at me for the longest time, see the wheels turning, and then finally he said, why do you want to know? Such a simple question, but he had been astounded that, well, that there was this agency training people to actually be genuinely curious about their well-being. For many people in all walks of life, all socioeconomic areas of life, it's rare to encounter someone genuinely curious about their lives and willing to listen. No wonder he was suspicious. Curiosity is countercultural. So at their core, these three foundational elements, direct communication, relationship-based communication, and curiosity, being curious, these aren't just essential to healthy communication, they are fundamental to liberal religion. From the very beginning, as humankind felt overwhelmed by the vastness of nature, to nowadays when we feel small next to the vastness of the cities and peoples and technological networks of our own making, one of religion's main purposes has been to remind all of us that you matter. You matter, and you matter, and you matter, and you matter. Religion says our actions matter. Our behaviors and attitudes matter. Whether to God or whether to the overall scheme of things, whether a liberal Unitarian Universalist or an evangelical Christian or an Orthodox Jew, humans engage with religion in part because we want to believe that our existence matters. Now, in liberal religious circles like ours, the way we live out this idea is by drawing the circle wide enough to include as many people as we can. But as we have historically discovered, this is not easy. It doesn't just happen because of abstract goodwill. But through healthy communication, we can begin understanding what needs there are and making appropriate space for them. Sometimes this communication is hard to take in. As when people of color said 2 years ago that many of the systems in our Unitarian Universalist world were unwittingly designed to favor the needs and wants of white people. That was hard to hear for many people. And yet that kind of communication is necessary to really living out our religious purpose, reminding ourselves and others that you matter. Building a better future that includes everyone will require some challenging culture shifts, and those shifts will come about only if we are able to communicate in healthy, effective ways. And I believe that in the here and now, practicing healthy communication skills is an invitation that we're willing to be there for one another in our times of trouble. It signals a commitment to solving what tensions arise in our lives. It signals the importance of honesty. It affirms that all our emotional lives are of value, that we have time to care for one another, to hear each other's pain, and be present in one another's lives. And this, my friends, this is where the culture shift needs to take place. The future of this country, of this world, is more than who we vote in at the next election. It's a heart change that needs to happen. It's a reawakening of the unnatural skills of healthy communication that humans spent so long developing that we are now in danger of losing. It's a reaffirmation that we are accountable to one another now in the biggest and most complex web of relationships humanity has ever known. I mean, no wonder we struggle with it. This is new territory. But we can make sense of that web with direct communication, with curiosity, with meaningful relationships, all built on a foundation of love.
Our offering is a vital way we show our gratitude to this community. By giving to UUCF, we know that this community of caring will continue to do its good work in the community and in the world. We thank you for your generosity.
Our closing hymn, we will be singing number 1014, Answering the Call of Love. So please rise in mind, body, or spirit and join us in singing.
We extinguish this chalice, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we will carry in our hearts until we are together again. Would you please join hands for our closing words?
Nice try.
When we tell our story from deep inside, and we listen with a loving mind, and we hear our voices in each other's words, then our heart is in a holy place. Until we are together again, amen, shalom, salam, namaste, and blessed be. Go now in peace.